This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Dan Hurley. The weather's cooling off and autumn is not far away. That means it's time to get ready for fall planting so your garden can keep producing for another couple of months. It's our monthly gardening show, and joining me to answer your questions are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, also Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Agent David Kester, and hopefully joining us shortly will be Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of Home Meadow Song Farm, Peter Huttinger. You can join the conversation, as you always do, and I warn you, if you have a very important question that you want to get in today, call early, because the phone lines fill up quickly. Our phone number is 513-419-7100, or you can email your questions to talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Certainly glad to have you here. Let's talk, before we start talking about what to plant, let's talk about what kind of harvest you've all had for this particular growing season. Was summer good? It seemed like we never really got that drought that we sometimes get.
We really didn't. It's been pretty seasonable, you know, rainfall. We've had it. We did have about a period of 10 days where it got kind of hot and dry. But other than that, it's been a really good summer. It's been a little hot for me, but I just like it a little cooler. But it's been a good growing season overall. It started out wet and cold, and that's always gets us off to a late start. And that was kind of unfortunate. But after that, it's we've had timely rains. They have been incredibly spotty. It amazes me. I was talked to a farmer down in Petersburg, and he had 5 inches in his radiant gauge the other night, and I had maybe, you know, 2, but it just has some parts of our tri-state just get deluged with rain, whereas, you know, during the summer it can be very spotty and non-existent. But overall, it's been a good summer.
What's the best thing you've seen growing this year, Sarah?
It's been good for water conservation, I will say that. We've completely turned off our irrigation for our lawn, so we haven't done that. We haven't seen any browning. We do have all of our vegetables in raised beds, so that has, you know, we've had a spot water, hand water here or there, but overall, pretty good with that. I will say, though, with all these spotty rains, we've had an increase of fungal outbreaks on our vine crops, squash, zucchini, cucumber, and then tomato. But that's okay. We can manage that.
What do you do to treat that?
Depending on what it is, of course, properly identify that. Reach out to your extension office. And then there's certain fungicides that you can apply, both synthetic and organic. So just identify what's going on, the issue going on. There's early blight of tomatoes, late blight will be coming up, and then there's powdery mildew, downy mildew of our vine crops. So get those identified. But
they won't necessarily kill the plant or the fruit.
Over time they can, but I haven't harvested on the tomatoes, and I haven't sprayed either. And we have still tons of tomatoes. Yeah, you can get some spotting on your tomatoes. We eat them. We do not sell them. So, you know, maybe if you're a commercial grower, you may want to, you know, for aesthetic looks to sell, you may want to treat. But, you know, again, it's whatever you want to do as a grower.
I really think when I plant a minimum of 3 plantings of summer zucchini squash during the season, and I'll start with May 1st. I'll put the seeds in the ground. I'll come back in mid-June with another planting, and I'll follow that up with a July planting. And, you know, the younger, more vigorous plants are much more resistant to the mildew diseases. It's when that foliage has been out there a long time. So if I get down to the, you know, I see that harvest is slowing down, I'll rip those plants out, get them out of the garden, and then I'll have that next planting come along. And it's not as easy to do that with tomatoes. We kind of like to do 1 or 2 plantings and carry those through. But a lot of those, it's just amazing how many cucumber crops that you can get and how many squash crops you can get in a season. We have a long growing season, and we need to take advantage of it.
Peter is with us now. We've been talking about what the growing season's been like this particular summer. What's been good for you?
Well, same experience as what Sarah and Dave have been experiencing, too. You know, particularly because of all this late rain and this odd temperature going very hot and then cool, you know, the fungal issues are a problem, particularly with the tomatoes.
So that's the biggest issue.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue for us right now. Yeah.
513-419-7100 is our phone number if you have a question today. And Tom, speaking of tomatoes, Tom has some questions about tomatoes. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So what's your question?
Tomatoes are abundant.
Tom, you keep going in and out there.
I'm sorry. I'm on a cell phone. I'm walking.
Stand still.
Okay. My tomatoes are very abundant, but they're not turning red. My cherry tomatoes are turning red, but the Romas and the Better Boys, they're just all staying green. What might be causing it?
I've heard that complaint from a lot of people this summer, and I've experienced it too. I think it's temperature more than a nighttime temperature, and you just have to be patient. But a lot of people it's definitely weather related. I'm not sure whether it's the cooler night temperatures or what it is, but it's temperature related, and give them time. They will eventually ripen for you. And it sounds like we're getting back up into the 90s, I think, towards the end of the week. And so you'll probably see them really start to ripen up.
Patience.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or look into some recipes for fried green tomatoes.
Yeah.
But at the Winton Terrace Community Garden, the Turner Farm Project there, the exact same situation exists for us. We're just harvesting lots and lots of cherry tomatoes, but a lot of green tomatoes that are just very slow to ripen.
My mom, when she had a garden years ago, used to always put them in a paper bag. Does that help? I mean, can you pick them at this point, or should you just wait for them to ripen on the vine?
I've got to be vine ripened for me. A lot of people do that when frost is coming, and they'll go ahead and do that. And those tomatoes are better than nothing, but they're not much better than nothing.
So, and sometimes those green tomatoes just accidentally fall on the ground. So I still harvest them and they will turn red, but they're not as juicy and sweet, and they're a little bit, they're harder.
Well, Tom, yeah. Patience. Patience is the answer here. Thanks so much for calling.
And you can also use green tomatoes and you can do salsa using green tomatoes too. It's more acidic and a little bit crunchy, but, you know, for those ones, like Sarah said, when they fall off the vine, you don't want to compost them. You want to eat them some way.
So you do. So do they not get bruised or anything when they fall?
Yeah, a little bruise here or there doesn't hurt. So eat it.
Work around it.
Yeah.
Eat around it.
Yeah.
So we've another tomato question. Our number, 513-419-7100. Scott, you have a tomato comment question.
Yeah, I do. I haven't had very good yield on the tomato plants that I planted, which are only a couple, and they are in 5-gallon containers. But I've never had very good yield. I think there may be a way, something you should prune some shoots on the plant to help increase yield.
What do y'all think?
You can. The suckers that come off in between the stem and in a major lateral limb, there will be a growth that comes in there, and those are frequently removed. I do that early in the season, and then I quit doing it after a while. A lot of the bottom foliage on a tomato plant is it's really not necessary for the plant, and it's those bottom leaves are the first to get infected with some diseases. So I will remove some of those as well. A lot of the greenhouse tomato growers prune their plants regularly, and they will remove foliage as well as the suckers. But I don't know. It's all, you know, when you grow in containers, you've got that confined area. And obviously, if you're watering it, you're going to have to replenish the nutrients because you're leaching all of them out. So you've got to fertilize regularly. And obviously, those should be in full sunlight.
And it's a good point about fertilizer, but just keep in mind when we think about the three numbers on the fertilizer bag, that first number is nitrogen. So this time of year, we're not so concerned about that nitrogen. Nitrogen gives it growth. We want the last two numbers, phosphorus and potassium, which encourages root production and flower and fruit production. So that's what we are more interested in, especially with the tomatoes.
And also within a pot, some tomatoes are indeterminate, which are longer, vinier plants, and then the determinate have a shorter, stockier plant. And also the tomatoes all sort of come ripe within a close period of time. With the indeterminate, you have a longer season. But I have found for the potted things that the potted tomatoes, that the determinate seems to be a little bit more successful.
And if you don't have a really heavy organic soil and your plants are, this is a great time to go out there and try to rejuvenate them with some fertilizer. And it doesn't have to be a chemical fertilizer. You can do it with some organic products. But it's a great time to fertilize those tomatoes and just push them a little bit more to provide some yield towards the end. I mean, we've still got, you know, a month and a half or more before we get the chance of frost. I think I looked up in our average date of the first frost in northern Kentucky, Cincinnati, is October 19th. And we're a long way from that. So keep gardening.
Mm-hmm. All right, Scott, I hope that helps you. Thanks so much for calling. Again, our number is 513-419-7100 as we're talking about gardening. And we're going to get to fall here in just a moment. And first, we're going to talk to Rick, though. Rick, what's your question?
Hi. My question is about my students. I'm a third grade teacher, and we've got a raised bed garden at school. And I'm just curious which vegetables would you recommend planting with my third graders this fall?
Carrots.
Yeah, carrots would be great.
Rainbow carrots.
Beets, lettuces. You know, it might be tough to get them to eat kale, but kale would be a great one.
Snow peas.
And really, you know, right now you could do a fall garden with them and use any of the, you can go to, well, I know there's a lot of the stores are now carrying, the big box stores are carrying fall transplants, but some of our garden centers, and I guess I'm going to mention them anyway, it's A.J. Ron in Cincinnati. They have fall vegetable garden transplants, and they would be super to put in, and you'll get cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, any number of things, as well as lettuce.
Well, for John, Ron's in Dew Falls, plant starts this year, unfortunately. Yeah, I stopped by there the other day, so I know we're not supposed to plug anybody, but I don't want anybody sent there for that.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, of course, the Extension office, we have a different planting calendar, so if you need a planting calendar, we would be more than happy to send that to you. You know, they have our email on the website, so check us out, and I'll be glad to either send you a link and or mail you one.
And our website is wvxu.org.
And one of the things you can do is with some really inexpensive PVC pipe is kind of bend that over that and put a plastic sheet over it, a clear plastic sheet, and make yourself a miniature greenhouse, and there's no reason why you can't be harvesting up until Christmas.
And there's
Christmas, wow.
Yeah, there's curriculum out there for school teachers and anything else, you know, to utilize with the youth. So if you need some of that, you know, I can share some of that. I know, Peter, you probably have some curriculum as well. So if you need any guidance on that, you know, please reach out to us.
You know, the biggest challenge for a school garden is that, you know, there's no school in the summer during the main growing season. So one of the things you can do is all the suggestions for a fall garden makes a lot of sense. But you can also, if you think about next year, you can do things like if you plant mid-season, say like butternut squash, you know, that will be planted before the students come, but it's a fairly low maintenance crop and it can be then harvested around Thanksgiving. Another crop that you would need to put in, say mid-May, is sweet potatoes. But then again, that'll fill up a bed and it's a very low maintenance. So it needs very little work during the summer when everybody wants to be on vacation. But when the fall comes in, those beds will just be billowing out with sweet potato leaves. And you can actually harvest some of the sweet potato leaves and cook them and eat them. They're very good. And then also that's a fall crop that they can harvest. And so I think that's, you know, kind of think ahead both times, you know, start early, but then also then start with new stuff in the fall. So students have the experience of both harvesting and planting.
And in addition, sorry, Mary.
I'm going to take a break here. Rick, does that answer your question? Good.
That's wonderful. Lots of information. Thank you all so much.
All right. Thank you. Sarah, you had some other thoughts you wanted to add to that.
Yeah, just in addition to, there's tons, but just as one other suggestion is that, you know, in addition to the edibles that you can do that we previously discussed, you can do an early spring cut flower type of program, CSA, so that way you harvest in beginning of May, just right before school lets out. So that's one other good project that you can do. And I also suggest going around to other schools to see what successes or failures that they've had. And I've recently went to Rothenburg School over in Cincinnati, and they have a fabulous program, and they are very eager to share their ideas, curriculum. So just look them up, and they would be more than happy to share ideas.
We go now to a question from Betsy Ray. Hi, Betsy Ray. What's your question? Betsy? Betsy Ray, are you there?
I'm here. Yes.
Okay, what did you want to talk about?
It is a quick comment about green tomatoes. If you need to pick some or you have some, they can use the same recipes as zucchini.
Okay, So you can make green tomato bread instead of zucchini bread, maybe something like that?
Yes. You can try that, and also there's lots of other things, like casseroles.
All right. Oh, well, we'll keep that in mind. Thank you so much for the suggestion. We appreciate it, Betsy Ray. Take care. Thanks for listening. Again, our number, if you have a question, 513-419-7100. Just briefly, we talked about some of the things that you can plant now. One of the things, David, you mentioned was the idea of, you know, clearing some things out. Can you plant where you just planted, or is there concerns about cross-contamination or what you plant or, you know, what getting the nutrients out of the soil?
There is concern about that, but if you've got raised beds, you've only got, you know, so many of them. And what we've always recommended, and we, you know, Peter and Sarah and I, we always top dress that with a little bit of new organic matter, some compost, and then we'll work that in. And I think that material can really help you overcome some of those problems. And then I what we always try to do is not come back with the same crop as we just took out of there. We'll put, you know, if we had beans in there, we'll come back with maybe squash in that bed, get out of that plant family and go to something new. And, but by all means, you know, take advantage of these spaces and keep planting. You know, this is a great time to be planting a lot of different things, especially vegetables. We're now into that fall garden season. And, you know, and I've always said that in Northern Kentucky, Cincinnati, we have better fall crops of cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, and those things than we do in the spring. They're much better in the fall.
In fact, I'll do some cabbage early in the season and stuff, but broccoli I've pretty put off to the fall now because I've just had so much problem with insects and worms.
I rarely have good success with cauliflower in the spring, but yeah. I've never failed with it in the fall.
Yeah. Something to keep in mind. Again, 513-419-7100. Jane has a question. Hi, Jane. What's your question?
Hi. I am a member of my community garden, and I and a few others planted squash. And probably, maybe a couple of months or so, all of our leaves were affected with this sort of a white, powdery mildew. We don't know what caused it. We were still growing the squash. I grew three different types. I grew zucchini, spaghetti squash, and yellow squash. And I did have quite a yield. But it got to the point where pretty much all of us have had to pull our squash plants.
What else can they do if that happens?
Well, there are some things you can do with fungicides. I mean, one very safe one is to spray them with milk. The other thing is what Dave
just
talked
about. Just plain old 1%, 2%, doesn't matter?
I usually just do a 50-50 mix. And you could use powdered milk. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you put a little bit of baking soda in that. But the other thing what Dave mentioned earlier about that is just succession too, particularly with the summer varieties, not so much with your fall varieties, winter squash.
Even commercial growers who do rely on synthetic fungicides, they never rely on one squash planting to take them through the whole summer. They will do at least three, and they just know that no matter how much they apply, those early squash plants are going to get diseased, and so they're going to rip those out, and they're going to rely, you know, separate the planting as much as you can because you don't want them to cross that disease to just blow over to the next ones. But again, the younger squash foliage, that younger plant is healthier and more resistant to those diseases. And just, you know, squash is what, maybe 50 days? Mm-hmm. You've got enough time in there for three different plantings during the season. So take advantage of that. And there are, I believe it's chlorothalonil is a pretty effective fungicide on those. It's a synthetic, fairly safe, but I just really rely on succession plantings.
And also disease-free seeds, so making sure that there's some disease resistance to that. Look in the catalogs. And also there's two different types of fungal issues going on. If it's on the top, that's powdery mildew. If it's on the bottom of the leaf, it's downy mildew. So it's really important to know what causes that. One is related to humidity, and the other is related to splashing of the rain. So understanding, get proper identification, understanding what causes that disease and how it's mobile really helps you implement the best management practice and program.
And Peter, just to clarify one second, there was a question. Is it you're mixing 50-50 water and milk?
Yeah.
Water and milk, and then maybe throw in some baking soda.
Yeah, well, you could look online, or if people contact me at peter@turnerfarm.org, I'll send them some simple recipes.
Great.
Yeah, it's a very tiny amount of baking soda.
Jane, thanks so much for your call.
Yeah, but one thing I also wanted to mention, too, just about any fungal issue is that in community gardens, some people only have a 4x4 box. And so the inclination is to really pack a lot in there. And I think with squash in particular, and tomatoes also, you really have to give them some space. You know, with a 4x4 box, I would only put 4 squash plants in.
So don't force it.
Yeah. Peter, I couldn't agree more. I've really gone on my 4x8 foot beds of putting 2 plants in per that. And they get so huge to begin with that they
And you'll
just,
still get a decent yield out of just a couple of plants.
But you'll actually end up, I think some ways you actually end up getting more.
Yeah.
So just always think about, I always say like air and light, it needs ventilation.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing, Marianne. When that first squash flower gets pollinated and the fruit goes, you only have days before you've got to pick that or it becomes a baseball bat. And so you want to be able to get in there quickly, be able to see the fruit that's in there. But you've got to, I can't tell you how many times, people just say, what am I going to do with all this squash? I mean, one plant can really produce a quantity if you pick it regularly.
We got an email from Matthew who wants to plant some fruit trees, and he's looking for suggestions for our area. He says the more interesting, the better.
You've got a lot of opportunities. Just remember that fruit trees are one of those crops that, quite honestly, we have people who are growing them organically. They're tough. When somebody says they're an organic grower, it doesn't automatically mean, well, they don't spray at all. If you're an organic fruit grower, you actually spray more than what a conventional grower sprays. So they're tough. You've got to really look at them carefully. I would recommend that you go online and look at some of the disease-resistant varieties that we have now. There are some excellent ones. There's one of the companies that you don't have to buy from them, but Hillside Orchards has a lot of different things, and Adams County Nursery has a catalog that's just phenomenal with information. Look at those, but there's also companies that have some of the heirloom and antique varieties of apples. Just some of those don't have as much disease resistant as some of the newer ones.
And is now a good time to plant a tree?
If you can find them, fall is a great time to plant, but usually you don't find them their availability until the spring.
One thing I'd like to recommend, too, is that both OSU Extension and Northern Kentucky Extension, or UK Extension, both have excellent bulletins on fruit tree selection and maintenance and care. And if you email me, peter@turnerfarm.org, I'll email you links to those publications because they're a great starting point. Also, disease resistance is really key, but also I highly recommend for the homeowner is dwarf trees, mm-hmm. with the exception of peach. I think that that's something to really consider.
They're just smaller?
They're smaller trees. They're easy to maintain. You can use a small 1-gallon hand pump to do your dormant and summer oil sprays, which are organic. And then also at Hayfield's Orchard, Dave and I and Marcia Lindner in the early spring around March, I guess that's late winter, do a fruit tree grafting and also care and pruning workshop. And so if they kind of watch for those, that's a good opportunity to do that. Network with friends, talk to people, what they've grown and works. Right now, a lot of people are interested in figs, and you can be very successful with those. They're a little bit trickier. They don't always make it through to winter. But the one variety of fig I found is Chicago Hardy is the one for us at home that is consistently produced. There's a lot of push on brown turkey, and I think the other one is Celeste, and I'm just not having the success in terms of crops. But the Chicago Hardy seems to be the ticket.
And another addition is the pawpaws, not your native pawpaw trees that you find in the understory, you know, in your pawpaw patch, and you know, in your hiking trail, but actually selected varieties that have more of a sweeto mango banana flavor. And Kentucky State University, our sister land grant university here in Frankfort, they are the lead researchers nationally, and they have selected very good varieties, and they're very low maintenance. Beautiful fruit. If you're interested, I have a class coming up in September, as well as so does Boone County. And so we'll be doing some pawpaw tasting, and you'll get some seeds that day. It takes a while, but you also get resources of where to purchase some pawpaw trees as well.
All right, we're going to move on and go to Jake. Jake, what's your question?
Yeah, my question is for Sarah Stoltz. Sarah, first time, long time. Love the show. I want to know if it's too late to start planting tomatoes or if it's already too far gone into the summer.
Yes. Yeah.
Simple answer. Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately. So there's no other way answer around that. I guess if you want to plant, you can plant them earlier, you know, in the spring, if you have a high tunnel or a low tunnel to extend your growing season that way. But we're a little late on growing tomatoes right now.
Sorry about that.
Sorry. Inside.
Maybe you can't do them inside, right? There's no hope of trying to do tomatoes
inside.
I
guess if you wanted to grow them with some grow lights, do that whole system hydroponically maybe.
Or wait till spring.
Or just wait. So yeah.
I mean, there are hydroponic tomatoes,
yes.
But at the expense of setting up, wait for spring.
Yeah, and I've seen the cost of some of these fluorescent lights, and they're insane. So, I mean, if you have the funds to support that, kudos to you. And actually, Kentucky State University has wonderful resources because they have aquaponics and hydroponic information available. So I would be happy to share that information with you.
Jake, good luck for the spring. Thanks for calling. We have a question now from Layla. Layla, what's your question? Layla?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead. What's your question?
Oh, yeah. This year I tried raising zucchini and pumpkins, and I had a problem with squash bugs and vine borers. I really don't like to spray much due to the chemicals. I'm trying to take care of it organically. What's the best way to do that?
Well, with squash borer, you can check this. I was just doing this morning, checking our squash, the stems of the squash plants where they enter the ground. And you'll see, they call it frass, a little yellow pile and maybe a little hole in the bottom of the stem. And that's a sign that there's a borer in there. You can take like a very sharp knife and cut lengthwise, not across, but lengthwise right above that where that little frass is coming out, and spread the plant open. And you look in there, there'll be a grub with a black spot on its head. You know, you just pull that out and swoosh it. Or put it in water with dish soap, and
like
then look
lovely.
Above it a little bit, because sometimes there'll be a couple in a row, a little chain going on in there. Then close that and just pile your soil up over that. And
it'll heal up?
It'll heal up. People say you have a 50% chance. I've really found it to be more closer to 90% chance of survival. So, you know,
what
I would do, every time you harvest,
every
time you water, check the bases of your squash plants.
All right. Well, I hope that helps you out, Layla.
And also, I want to say with when using chemicals, I really want folks to understand that using that word chemical can mean both organic and synthetic. So you, as David was talking about, the orchard apple growers who want to grow organically, they're going to spray more, yes, with organic product, but it's still a chemical. So, you know, there are organic chemicals that you can spray on squash bug, aphids, whatever it may be. Yes, organically, you may have to spray more, but it is still a chemical.
There's a lot of research being done with insect barriers, netting that goes over them. And of course, with squash, you're not only eliminating the borer coming in there, the moth coming in and laying eggs, but you're also eliminating the bees for pollination. So you've got to time it a little bit, but some of the row covers, the netting is really being effective with those.
Layla, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Our number, 513-419-7100. We also take email, talk@wvxu.org. And we got an email from Jen who says, how do you get rid of moles? And we must hear this almost every show. How do you get rid of moles?
Yeah, my opinion is don't. So I'll turn it over to Sarah. And
well, Dave. Why don't? Why do you say that?
It just aerate the soil.
Yeah.
I mean, as a vegetable gardener, the only time I've had a problem with moles is sometimes if you've done like plowed a row, a line, and then planted your corn along that gully. I've had the moles use that as a superhighway and pop out all the corn plants. But outside of that, I don't really see them as an issue.
So you don't mind the mounds in the soil and all?
No. And, you know, voles with a V, now they eat stuff. The moles don't. But, I mean, I know I'm kind of an extreme on that.
Okay, but some people really don't like them, David. Yeah. So what do you say?
There's a couple of things. One, trapping is actually pretty effective. There's some good traps that you can do it. You probably are thinking that you are inundated with moles, and you really aren't. One mole can do a lot of tunneling and a lot of damage. So trapping actually is pretty effective. There are also – there's a worm. It's like an artificial worm that they use for fishing baits, but it is impregnated with a molecide, a product that will kill them. The mole comes along. It thinks it's an earthworm. Remember, moles are carnivorous. They eat insects and they eat earthworms. They don't eat vegetation. So it'll think that that's a regular earthworm. It'll eat it and it will kill it, and everything stays below ground. There's some issues with that, because if the mole should become above ground and a cat or a dog should feed on that, then you've got a problem. And a lot of people don't like to use those, but that's effective and it can get rid of them.
All right. Now, 513-419-7100, we go to Joe. Joe, what's your question? Joe?
Hi.
How are you today? That's okay. Good. What's your question today?
Another thing I use for moles is products that are basically castor oil. So it's harmless to your garden. It's harmless to kids and pets, but moles don't like it. It doesn't kill them. It just scares them away. They don't like it, so they'll move on to your neighbor. My question is about we have a pot, and we planted some basil seeds in it several months ago. The seeds are all alive. There's four of them in there. The one in the middle is doing the best, but they're really not getting any bigger. The one in the middle has four basil leaves on it, and the two leaves that start when it's just a tiny seedling are yellowing, but it's not really growing, and it gets plenty of water, gets plenty of sun. What do I do?
What about nutrition? Are you fertilizing it at all?
I did fertilize it. I don't remember the numbers on the bag offhand, and I'm not at home.
I would use a liquid feed and do that and just see if that foliage should be a pretty dark green, and just see if you can get a little bit of growth out of that. It ought to be okay. I can't imagine, you know, we always say herbs don't require fertilizer, but I've always found that if you do fertilize them, you get more leaf growth. So I would try that.
And you were talking off air that basil's not been great for you this year.
Yeah, we're struggling. We had some kind of mold. Fungal disease on it this year, which I've never had before. And actually, I was just noticing it today, so I haven't gone online or talked to any of my colleagues at Turner Farm to find out a little bit more research on it. But one thing I do want to talk to, and if Sarah and Dave want to correct me on this if I'm wrong, but castor beans and castor oil, that is highly toxic.
Right.
And it is toxic to children and
castor
to animals.
Castor oil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that could be dangerous
for moles?
And the flowers themselves are poisonous.
And it really hasn't proven to be effective either. So I would probably,
Joe, be careful with the castor oil.
Yeah, I would be extremely careful with
it. It's really a very toxic plant.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your call, Joe. We appreciate it. Again, our number is 513-419-7100. We go to Jeff. Jeff, what's your question? Jeff?
Yes.
What's your question, please?
Hi. I've got a very large, long gravel driveway that has become completely overgrown with grass and weeds. And I've tried all the safer methods, flame weeding and, you know, different vinegar and soap and things like that. And it's just not effective. So my contractor, who I asked to deliver gravel, said, this is a waste of time. You need to come in here with 41% Roundup or some of the even stronger defoliants. And I'm really obviously not interested in doing that. Any ideas?
What your problem is that the flame weeding should work.
What is flame weeding?
Flame weeding is you just take – it's usually a propane tank and you hook it up to a – there's a special tool that you can buy that will – and you just go over the top of them. And you don't have to cook them, but you just have to heat that foliage up. And it usually – you know, if you do it, it'll get the root system as well. The problem is that whatever you're using is not killing the entire plant, and so it's coming back. But the alternative to that is obviously to use some pretty heavy-duty chemicals if you want to keep it. You're going to actually, what you're doing is sterilizing the ground, which especially if your driveway is on a slope, all that material when you get a heavy rain is going to be washing right into our groundwater. So I would go on the side of using the flame weeder and or the vinegar solutions rather than going the chemical route on that one. And then again, if you do a little bit heavier layer of gravel, I think that would help.
Yeah, a question I have. See, we have a similar driveway. It's what they call DGA, half inch minus, but it's crushed limestone with dust. Do you not use it that often? Because we just are driving up and down it, so you have grass and weedy grass in the center, and then where your tires go, it's clear.
What do you find,
So,
Jeff?
I mean, and I find that, personally, I find that aesthetically pleasing. I've known people who have actually seeded grass in the middle. I wouldn't have done that, but... Yeah.
Jeff, what did you say? Does driving over it help?
Yeah, unfortunately, my driveway looks like it's an extension of my lawn. And
okay.
I don't have those nice tire tracks.
So you're probably just not, there's not, it's not being used enough to do that, I guess. Yeah.
I need to drive more.
Yeah. No, I don't need to drive more, but yeah.
Well, Jeff, thanks so much. I hope one of those methods work for you. Take care. Again, our number 513-419-7100. Joseph has a question. Hi, Joseph. What's your question?
Hello. Wanted to ask about what's called the three sisters, the corn, green beans, and squash being used together to help one another.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. Do you all know about that?
Yeah. My wife does it all the time. Piece of advice that she would give you and I would give you is that, it's a field corn that you're growing. If you grow sweet corn, that's a shorter season, and they're not as strong or plants, and so they don't provide the architecture. And in terms of squash, what you're generally doing is a vining squash, not zucchini or yellow crookneck. What you're doing is things like spaghetti squash, acorn squash, those sort of winter fall crops. And so the idea is you plant those three things together. People usually stagger. They may put in the corn first and then they follow with the pole beans. One thing to kind of consider is that Kentucky Wonder Bean is extremely vigorous and that has a tendency to take down the plants. But your black turtle beans and black beans work pretty well. Also, I would recommend, if you're going to use conventional green beans, say like a Blue Lake or something like that, use a half runner because they don't grow as long. And then you just kind of step back and stay out of the way. Early on, you need to weed, but after everything kind of fills in, you just have to stand back and let it go.
How do they help each other? How do they interact?
There's support mainly. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they
hold
grow
each
up.
Other up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's... I think it doesn't happen in my garden. I have a place for the corn, I have a place for the beans, and I have a place for the squash.
Well,
and they don't mix.
OCD there, so you don't.
Yes, I can't handle that.
The squash is supposed to keep the weed pressure down as it blankets the soil. The corn is there, is the structure that is the trellis system for the beans. So again, the three sisters, they work cohesively together. The beans also add nitrogen back into the soil because they naturally fix nitrogen. And so it's just a wonderful relationship that they have.
Yeah, you got to remember, it is not a tidy, neat situation. No. But it's also, at a certain point, it's extremely beautiful. So, and then also, when you're, a lot of people, when they're doing that, they're growing beans and they let a lot of the beans dry and then harvest them as dry beans for storage. And that's really what the Native Americans did. And there are corresponding techniques in Central and South America also that use these techniques.
All right. Thank you so much, Joseph. We appreciate your call. Again, our number is 513-419-7100. We go to Dory. Hi, Dory. What's your question?
Hi. I was just wondering what the best way is to get rid of bagworms on a tree.
Bagworms.
Get rid of the arborvitae.
You have them on a pine tree. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Ideas?
I mean, you can hand pick them, depending upon the size of it. Yes, there are applications of chemicals. It's really tricky. There's a time frame window of when to apply, because actually, if you get right when they're about to emerge, those little very tough silked sacks will start wiggling, and so your whole tree looks like it's kind of moving. Arborvitae, for example, they're very susceptible to the bagworms. They're not my favorite plant, so I don't recommend those because of the bagworms, because they become very difficult.
But this is on a pine tree. So
yeah, you're past the point where you're going to get good chemical control. So
right now,
it's really hand picking right now. And then first thing.
You mean actually going there
and
pulling
the
them
bag.
Off?
Yeah, and you have to destroy that bag. It is really a tight cocoon in there, and insecticides are not going to penetrate that. So it's really.
How do you destroy it?
Throw them in the garbage.
Throw them in the garbage or put them in the water or something and get rid of them that way.
Drive over them?
Yeah.
So there are soil drenches that you could put down at a certain time. So when they emerge, they'll start feeding. But as David said, topical application will not be effective.
Good luck, Dory. It sounds like a project. Thanks for your call. I had a question. We talked a lot about planting vegetables and things in your garden this time of year. What about flowers? You know, you even putting flowers out, you always hear about pansies this time of year and mums. Is there anything else that's maybe a little bit different that's good for this time of year?
There's fall asters, which can be really pretty right now. And, you know, some of the foliage plants, you can get those. Some of the weird cabbage and kales, they're kind of interesting to have around.
Ornamental
of course,
grasses.
You know, a lot of, you know, right now or in the next couple of months, it's an excellent time to plant. And that includes shrubbery as well as spring flowering bulbs. But there's not a lot of things that, other than mums, asters, and pansies that you can plant that you're going to get fall color out of.
Any perennials you can put in that'll come up always
sure.
at this time of year?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Perennials there's a whole list great. Of them.
Coneflower, that's a good one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So just look out for those and see what might grow at this time of year.
Yeah, it's just been an explosion of coneflowers and new ones that have come out. That
what
are
do
just,
they look like? That doesn't sound familiar.
It looks what kind of like a daisy, but with a variety of color. And Newport, the city of Newport, their flower is the purple coneflower.
Oh, we have those in our yard. They came out in the summer, so they'll last through the fall?
They will give you some fall color.
Yeah,
I go in as after they you know, deadhead them, and I take them down to a stem, or where I see another bud starting. And so at the Witten Terrace Community Garden, you know, they're still blooming now.
So we should go deadhead all of ours then, because I guess I don't think we've been doing that. So they'll come
back. Yeah, and the coneflower has like the little cone on the top as the seed head. And I guess the story is that people used to use those to comb their hair. I don't know how true that is or not.
Oh, that's been an interesting hairstyle.
Yeah.
What else do people need to do now? Lawns. We haven't talked about lawns at all. Just a few minutes we have left. Is it time to fertilize yet?
No, not yet, but it's the time to really look at your lawn. And if you want to make changes to do some seeding, now's the time to really evaluate it. It's this is the best time of the year, bar none, for getting that done. It's a good time if you know, to really make some changes. We still recommend fescues as the best lawn grass for this area. But now is the time to do the seeding. Fertilizing comes up in October. And aeration can be done in the fall of the year in combination with reseeding. All those things are best accomplished in the fall of the year.
We have time for one quick question from Tim. Tim, you've got about 20 seconds. What's your question?
Yes, ma'am. I'd like to attract deer. I've got a tree line that right now just has a bunch of weeds that I'd like to get rid of. I'm wondering what you guys would recommend, again, more natural native kind of stuff that I can plant.
10 or 15 seconds. How do we attract deer? Come to my house. I don't know.
Yeah, come to my house. Yeah. Plant hostas.
You know, you can certainly put out one of those. You can buy them at any of the farm supply stores as a lick, yeah. Molasses or salt, and they will certainly be attracted to that. Just make sure you really want these. I've got many of them that I'd be more than happy to give you.
To share.
I would say that'd be the first way.
All right, Tim, good luck with that. And thank you all for being here. We're out of time. It's
thank
been
you.
Our monthly gardening show. My guest, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of Home Meadow Song Farm, Peter Huttinger. Also, Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. Sorry about that. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Today's technical director, Josh Elstrow. Our segment producer is Layla Shakui. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. Also want to remind you that all of these folks, we have information on the website to get in touch with them. They all talked about programs and information, all of that, connections to all of those, links to all of those are on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Dan Hurley. Here and Now is coming up next.